I want to read a prayer by Marianne Williamson. And then we're going to go off on a topic that is shot through and through in the big book in 12 and 12. But it's hardly ever discussed in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's our entire program. It's what the entire program points to. It's what all 12 steps point to. It's what the fellowship points to. It's what the service piece points to. It is God. And that topic, which this session is going to be on, is love. In the big book, in the 10th step, it says, love and tolerance of others is our code. Now, they could have just said, love is our code, but the people who wrote this book wrote it for alcoholics, and they knew alcoholics real well because they were alcoholics. They knew they had to throw tolerance in there. So in the big book, it says, love and tolerance of others is our code. There's a piece from step 10 in the 12 and 12. It says, courtesy, kindness, justice, and love are the keynotes by which we may come into harmony with practically everybody. This is a morning prayer. It's still morning, so it applies. Dear God, I give this day to you. May my mind stay centered on the things of spirit. May I not be tempted to stray from love. As I begin this day, I open to receive you. Please enter where you already abide. May my mind and heart be pure and true, and may I not deviate from the things of goodness. May I see the love and innocence in all mankind, behind the masks we all wear, and the illusions of this worldly plane. I surrender to you my doings this day. I ask only that they serve you and the healing of the world. May I bring your love and goodness with me to give unto others wherever I go. Make me the person you would have me be. Direct my footsteps and show me what you would have me do. Make the world a safer, more beautiful place. Bless all your creatures. Heal us and use me, dear Lord, that I might know the joy of being used by you. Amen.
This is a really cool piece. It's a prayer on, it's called Love Is. I was at a Matt Tabor retreat, and they give out these little booklets, and this was actually in that booklet. And a priest had put together a bunch of really cool down-to-earth prayers. In this booklet, actually, is the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, prayer of St. Francis, the acceptance prayer, or the serenity prayer in its entirety. For those of you that don't know, the serenity prayer is a lot longer than just the two or three lines. And this was one of the prayers in that booklet. Like I said, it's called Love Is. Love is friendship that has caught fire. It is quiet understanding, mutual confidence, sharing, and forgiving. It is loyalty through good times and bad. It settles for less than perfection and makes allowances for human weakness. Love is content with the present. It hopes for the future, and it doesn't brood over the past. Love is the day-in and day-out chronicle of irritations, problems, compromises, small disappointments, big victories, and common goals. If you have love in your life, it can make up for a great many things you lack. If you don't have it, no matter what else there is, it is never enough. I'd like to let you know that at some point, it's already started, that during this session I'm going to cry. For those of you that are co-criers, you probably want to take out your tissues now.
CCA, Co-Criers Anonymous.
For those of you that don't know, the license plates on my car say Just Love. As a matter of fact, there's two of them hanging up on the wall. The reason why love is such a passion in my life was because when I came to AAA, I couldn't love myself. Therefore, I couldn't let anybody else love me. I came from a very loving, very supportive family, and I hated it because I was dead on the inside. Therefore, I could never let anybody in. So I'm sure there's people here that have a what if, you know, what if my family was nicer than it was, or what if, I guess, you know, I just realized, I guess it doesn't apply. I was going to say, what if I was white? But I guess it doesn't apply here today. I don't know why. You know, what if, you know, I had more money? What if I had a better wife? What if, you know, for me, what if doesn't work? Simply because there's plenty of people throughout the fellowship that had all those things that still became low lives, that still ripped apart their life and the lives of the people around them. For me, that isn't my problem. My problem is that I'm spiritually blocked, and that when I drink alcohol, it helps me with it. That it helps me be comfortable within myself. And when I first came to AA, I came from a very religious family. I came from a very loving, wonderful, supportive Brady Bunch family. Literally, I mean, we had knapsack races in our backyard. I mean, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding, and I know most of you can't relate to it, but I still became the idiot. I still became the lowlife. And I came from a religious family, and this whole God thing I had a real problem with because it didn't work for me. Because, you see, God was out to get me because I was evil and I lied and I did all these things that were wrong, and you're punished for that. And the whole concept of God didn't work for me. It didn't apply to me. I'll go with everything else, but don't talk to me about that. It just doesn't work for me. And I can't remember now where I got it from necessarily. Sometimes I remember and sometimes I don't. I really don't. Right now, I don't remember where the concept came in from, but I know in the Bible it says that God is love and truth. And for some reason, I just focused on that. The concept of God being love was where it started for me. Because my concept of God wasn't the kind of God you would turn to for help, because he's going to get me. You know, I'm not going to pray to God because then he'll know where I am. You know, and the concept of love is where it started for me. And what I started noticing in reading our literature and reading spiritual literature, every single time from that moment, like 10 years ago to this very day, every single time I've ever read something that talked about a higher power or God or whatever, you could take that word out and put the word love and it would still make perfect sense. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Let me give you an example, that I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to love. That I sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with love. I ask love to remove my shortcomings, because my shortcomings are the times that I'm not loving toward myself or to somebody else. And it's interesting because, like I said, I just started, and then I started saying, wow, this is very weird. You know, this is very weird. And that word was where it began for me, because my concept of God didn't work when I came here. And that was something that opened a whole entire door. Another thing that I started saying was that, you know, sort of like with the third step where it says will and life, that the word God, when I say that, I know that every single one of you gets a different definition when I say it. I would guarantee that everybody here gets a completely different definition when I use that word. But somehow, when I use the word love, everybody totally is kind of on the same page with that. And also, what I think is that in regard to love, you know, God is kind of this lofty, up there, over there, out there kind of a term, and that love brings it down to earth, and love brings it here and now, and love brings it inside of us. And that it's just more bite-sized for me. And I know that it's a whole lot more than that necessarily, but the pure concept of love still just works for me. And that's where the deepest part of my faith comes from, that I believe that God oversees everything and that he always has my best interests in mind, and that I might go through some situations that I don't like very much, but inevitably when I come out the other side, I'm better for it, and now I have tools to help people and to help them through that same thing. You know, in sobriety, I've gone through two marriages that ended. Incredibly painful, incredibly overwhelming, incredibly disappointing, incredibly bewildering. And in using the process of the steps and using the process of belief in a higher power and the process of trying to get a better perspective toward the things that happened in my life, I can now see them as ways that God broke me from attachments that I had, helped me see things from a completely different perspective, that have brought me to a place where I now see those things as good things that happened to me. Because having gone through it the way that I did, and having now come out the other end, that I'm better for it, and now I have tools to help other people to work through it themselves. I just had that conversation with some ladies during the break, and I wasn't going to get into that part of it yet, but for me, love is really important, because first of all, I need to ask myself, do I think that that's important? And if I think that that's important, I need to ask myself, is that the way I'm living my life? Loving toward myself and loving toward others. And the key to it for me is whether I think they deserve it or not. You know what I mean? Like, for me, how I see love in a relationship, or perhaps a marriage, is that, you know, some people say, you know, how do I know if I'm marrying the right person? How do I know if I love this person? How do I know? How do you know? You know, how do you know? How do you know? I'd like to suggest that how you can find out if you're in love with someone and perhaps they're the right person to marry you is that you know that you love them when you get good news, they're the first person that you want to share it with. And when you get bad news, just the thought of them makes it easier somehow. And for me, that's what love is. I don't know why I'm crying. And also, in a perhaps a marriage relationship, for me, love is that when I have an argument with my wife, that, you know, things go back and forth, some things are said, you get into an argument, it gets a little heated, and that when you kind of walk away from it, that, you know, I'm hurting and I know that she's hurting. And for me, what love is that I'm more concerned about her pain than I am about my own. And for me, that's what love is. And one of the ladies who's here emailed me one day, and this is what she said. She said, I've come across an interesting term, and I wonder if you can help me with this. How would you define unconditional friendship? How do you think one practices such a thing? If you've got some time, I would appreciate some input. Peace and love. And then she put her name. And I send out spiritual emails every day. And I guess, as you can tell, we're, you know, I'm just really heavily into this stuff since I have no life. And the thing is that it's brought me many rewards beyond comprehension. And when I first read that, the thought that went through my mind was, why is she asking me this? Like, you know, how do you answer a question like that? And I ignored it, pretty much. And a few weeks went by, and I was running one morning, and I didn't look at the question as unconditional friendship. I just kind of looked at unconditional love, because I think the two are basically the same. And I was out running one day, and all of a sudden, this great thought landed on me that came out of nowhere. It just landed on me. And these three parts of unconditional love came together in my mind, and I said to myself, that's the answer. I understand. I know how to answer this question. You know, I'm running. I wasn't even thinking about the question. I wasn't even thinking about love. I was running. I wasn't doing anything. And all of a sudden, this great, for me, inspired thought landed on me. And this was the response that I gave back, and I shared it with a bunch of people. And every time I share it with people, they're just like, that is just so profound. And I swear to you, it has nothing to do with me. This did not come from me. I don't know where it came from. It landed on me literally in a moment that I wasn't even thinking about it. And my first response to her was, I smell more. I see unconditional love and unconditional friendship as the same. But based on what you've given me and what my heart is prompting me to respond with, I offer the following as the three parts of unconditional love, which I think generally apply, except in a few cases, like in a marriage or in children. You know, I think there's a greater connection with a marriage and with, you know, I don't want to make it weaker than other relationships, but like with kids, you know, you have to love your kids no matter what. There's an unconditional relationship there. Now, that doesn't mean you need to be around them if they're abusive. I'm not talking about that, but they're, for me, in a marriage and in a child-parent relationship, there's a sacredness that's added as opposed to the average person that you pass in the street, and maybe even in cases of family relationships. I said, as far as I see it, unconditional love has three parts. The first part is unconditional love toward others. I need to accept and not condemn anything that another does. The word grievance means a fancied or real reason for complaint, and I am not capable of seeing the whole picture enough to correctly or thoroughly have a grievance toward anyone, since only God knows the divine plan. I need to accept who they are and what they do. I am not capable of judging anyone. God is working with them, so I cannot condemn where they are or how they are acting. So my job is just to love them and stay grounded in the second and third part of this answer. Then the second part, as I saw it at that time, or the second part of what poured out of me that day, literally. Number one, which is the one I just read, unconditional love toward others, needs to be coupled with unconditional love toward myself. Now, I hate to generalize, but sort of an Al-Anon, that's the piece that's missing, is that they're dependent on the alcoholic, and the alcoholic can do whatever they want to them, and they're not considering themselves in that situation so much, and they're just allowing the other person to act any way they want to, and kind of they just take in the abuse and the neglect and all of that, and they stay. Now, I'm not saying you should get out of a relationship. I'm just saying that part of unconditional love needs to be loving toward myself, too. It says that this point is not as obvious as the first one, because, you know, we're just talking about unconditional love, and normally you think about unconditional love toward the other person, bless you. And not knowing this causes a lot of trouble for ourselves. While I need to unconditionally love others, in some cases the best way to also be loving toward myself is to love them from a distance. I can accept them as they are, but I need to be loving to myself and decide whether I am going to accept another as having a big part in my life. So in other words, I need to be based in number three, which I'm going to get to, while I decide whether another has a large or contributing part in my life. So my job is just to love them and stay grounded in loving myself and the third part. Then number three, as far as I see it, says, I believe my relationships need to be based in reality. Not always easy. I need to keep my eyes open to, as best I can, see the truth about who I let into my life. I know that people come and go as time passes, but generally I can decide to spend a lot of time with any one person or to keep my interactions with them at a minimum or a surface level. Life may cause someone I consider unhealthy for me to cross my path often, so I need to see the reality of this and perhaps look for the lesson that God is trying to teach me by their presence in my life. Also, I need to be dealing with the reality of who they are now, not how they used to be or how I would like them to be or how they potentially could be, but who they are with me recently. So my job is to keep my relationship based in love, based in loving them and loving myself at the same time while staying based in current reality. I have no idea where that came from. Those three thoughts landed on me that day when I went running. And for me, those are the three things I need to keep in mind when I'm considering living a life that has unconditional love. Now, again, like I said in the beginning, do I feel that it's important to be loving? Because if I do, and I did, that this was the direction I started moving in. Now, in talking about God before, and that God is love, I need to realize that in my life, sometimes not nice things are going to happen. Things that I would describe as not nice things. There's a really beautiful... should I do the guru and the farmer?
Do it all, baby.
This is going to be a long session.
It's all right. The hour afterwards is in silence.
Something that I've tried doing as a way of life is moving towards seeing things as good and bad. If I believe that God oversees everything or at least set the ball rolling or is involved in my life, which is important to me because I personally need to feel that God plays a part in my life, because if God doesn't play a part in my life, who am I going to turn to for help? I saw a line one time that I sent out to my group that said, if there is a God, he is the answer. And if there is no God, there is no answer. And I also came across this really beautiful story that for me puts good or bad into perspective and helped me move past labeling things as good and bad. And this is the story of the guru and the farmer. And it's in your packet, but I'll kind of share it off the top of my head. Because for me, it's an incredibly profound spiritual lesson. And there was a guru who lived on a mountain, and below him there was a farmer who had a lot of cattle and crops and stuff. And one day, one of the cows broke through the fence, and all of the cows left his property. And his cattle was the biggest part of his income, so he went up to see the guru guy, who he didn't like very much and thought it was kind of a slacker because, you know, you got to be working. This guy just sits there, and people come to him, and he talks, and what's that all about? So he goes up to see the guru guy, and he says, you know, something terrible has happened. You know, one of the cows has broken through the fence, and, you know, they all left, and the cattle is the biggest part of my income, and this is terrible, and isn't this terrible, and something bad has happened. And the guru kind of looked at him and said, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And, you know, now the farmer didn't like the guru worse than he didn't like him before that. And he goes back to shaking his head back down to his farm. And a couple days later, since there was a hole in the fence, this really large herd of wild horses came running onto his land. And he quickly closed off the fence. And now he had this huge cattle of horses. And horses are a whole lot better than cows. So this wonderful event had happened. And he went back up to see the guru guy. And he says, you know, something wonderful has happened. You know, a whole big, huge herd of wild horses came onto my land because the fence was open. And isn't this wonderful? Because horses are so much better than cows. And this is really great. Isn't this wonderful? And the guru guy looked at him and said, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And he shook his head again because, you know, obviously this was good and obviously the other one was bad. So he went back down to his farm, vowing never to talk to him again. And a couple days later, his son was trying to break one of the horses by riding it and domesticating it. And the horse threw him off his back and he landed on his leg and broke his leg. And his son was in terrible pain. And now the farmer is really upset because something terrible has happened again. So he goes up to see the guru guy again and says, you know, something terrible has happened. My son was thrown from one of the wild horses when he was trying to break him. And, you know, he's broken his leg, and this is terrible, and isn't this terrible thing that's happened, and isn't this bad? And the guru guy looked at him and said, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And he again went back down to his farm, and a couple days later, war broke out in the country. And soldiers came around looking for young men to take in as soldiers, and because his son had a broken leg, they didn't take him. And so now this wonderful event had occurred, and he went back up to see the guru guy and said, you know, something wonderful has happened. My son had a broken leg, the soldiers didn't take him when they were going to war, and isn't this a wonderful thing? And the guru guy said to him, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And it's interesting because in my life I've seen that so often. In my life I've seen that, you know, my addiction in no uncertain terms could be easily labeled as something that was bad. I ripped apart the people who came in contact with me during that period of life. I did things that I am not proud of. I pushed away family members of people that I cared for in no uncertain terms in extreme ways at times. Yet, having come to AA and found this way of life, and desperately wanting to seek another way besides my own, because for me, you know, the first step is sort of surrender to alcohol, but in the third and seventh step, I need to surrender to self-will or my life run on my will. I need to consider another way besides my own, and my fourth step proves that to me every time. And then I need to seek this higher power, and I need to seek this trying to be loving toward others. That I now see my addiction in the period of life that I was going through. Believe me, some of those things I wish didn't happen, but you know what? If those things didn't happen, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I love where I am today. One of my marriages ended, and what I experienced in the ending of that marriage was a lot of pain and a lot of misery and a lot of considering another way besides my own. In the moment of that marriage breaking up was the first moment that I realized, you know what? There are people that I care for and that I love, and I'm not able to convey that to them. And I hated living that way. I could never show people the love that I had for them in my heart because they never lived up to my expectation and I would treat them badly because they weren't acting the way I wanted them to. And the breakup of that marriage showed me something that ripped my soul apart, and that was that, you know, I love someone and I'm not able to let them know that. I say it to them and I act sometimes that way, but there are times that I act in a way that isn't loving and I push them away and I don't want to be this way anymore. And that was when I really started focusing on, first of all, seeing that the good and bad things that are happening in my life inevitably was the sign of a loving higher power, and that when I'm able to work through it and become better when I come out the other end, that God was using something that I could label as bad as actually something that was good, because inevitably that opened up something in me that made me a better person and got me to face something that I wasn't willing to look at before that point. And that now, having moved past all of that, and now being a better person because of it, I now have better tools to help somebody else out of that misery. And that I started seeing that this isn't bad, this is actually good, and it's just the loving hand of a loving higher power that's giving me a tool and an opportunity for spiritual growth, for the betterment of me and for the betterment of me being able to help somebody else. And that's the basis of my spirituality. That's the basis of where I come from in my definition of what I would call my faith. And it's kind of interesting with the whole thing of love and spirituality and faith and all that, because like I said before, there's plenty of people that I can easily judge and say, well, they don't deserve it. But inevitably, when I don't show love to someone, I suffer as much or more than that person does by me not showing them love. You know, we talked about the evening review, and I'll give you a real short evening review. Who did I love today, and who didn't I love today? There's your evening review. Because for me, that's the essence of this whole entire thing. That the way God works in and through me is the way I show love to other people. That the way God works in me is that love that I have for myself and for others, and that continues to grow, and that has become almost a way of life and a very large part of what I see as my relationship with my higher power. And for me, that's very interesting to talk like that, because I came from a get even judgmental, he's going to punish me kind of a higher power, to now where I see it just as just pure love. You know, I started at pure love, and I was able to take out the term and put in love, and it still would make sense. I then kept that and kind of went off on a couple different things, and now I've just come right back to that infinite sense of love, and that everything's going to be okay, whether I agree or not, or whether it feels like it or not. That I can use something that somebody could term as bad for the good of me and for the good of others, and I can see that that's how God works again and again and again. It's kind of interesting because like Mike had said, as far as I'm concerned, it's the basis of the whole essence of AA. It's the basis of all the essences of all the 12-step fellowships. It's the basis of all religions. It's the basis of the only comfort that I've known, the only true comfort that I've known, the only true peace that I've known, is when I'm loving toward myself and when I'm loving toward someone else. Those are the greatest moments of my life. Those are the greatest moments of my life. And I don't think that's a coincidence, because, again, for me, that's when I am totally connected. You know, you talk about conscious contact. You want to have conscious contact with God? At some point today, do something for somebody else and don't let them know you did it. Guess what? You just had conscious contact. It's not some out there, over there, up there kind of an experience with a power greater than ourselves. It's a right here, it's a right now, at all times, never away from me, always there, always wanting us to do the next right thing, always prompting us with our conscience, always wanting to work in and through us, and us just being a channel for that. And you know, those times that I wanted the car, or I wanted the girl, or I wanted the job, or I wanted the money, or I wanted the tape, or it always fell short, and it always left me feeling like there's got to be something more. You know, there's got to be something more, because as soon as I got it, I was then looking at what somebody else had, and I wanted that. But the moment that I started focusing on, in most moments, what's the next loving thing, which for me is what is meant by, you know, what's God's will for me, is the next loving thing, loving toward myself and loving toward someone else, that was when I found incredibly satisfying happiness and contentment and joy and usefulness and being even right here, right now, and being comfortable right here, right now. And then to bring that all the way back to the first step, thinking isn't an option, because I'm feeling real good right now. Why would I want to change that? I don't need to get back to even because I'm at even. I don't need to get back to comfortable because I am comfortable. And the strange thing is that logically a lot of this doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like when I first started saying, you know, I want to make this a priority, the first thing that popped into my head is everybody's going to take advantage of me. You know what's strange? The moment that I stopped taking advantage of other people, that was the moment that they stopped taking advantage of me. I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't know. It's kind of funny because before the... Like we said in the beginning, we really don't know what we're going to be doing or what we're going to be talking about. We're literally making this up before each session as we go into each session. And Mike said to me, you know, why don't we talk about love this session? And, you know, it's kind of like, it's really kind of strange because it's kind of like, you know, just turn me on and wind me up and watch where I go. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's really kind of strange. But that was when I really started focusing on love, and when I started talking to people about love, that was when just all of a sudden everything just changed, and that was when God became real for me. That one simple word, you know, a lot of people think love is kind of a four-letter word. It's not, you know, their version of love is people hurting them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my family's supposed to love me, all they did was hurt me. That's what I think love is, you know. So then they go on living their life, taking from other people and hurting other people because that's what they... And, you know, as soon as I... You know, like Leo Biscaglia talks about love. He's dead now. It's strange when people talk like this. And, you know, I can even look at it from the outside because sometimes this stuff just kind of comes out of me that, you know, logically it doesn't make sense. But when actually practiced and experienced, it's just an incredible thing. And it's funny because everybody here has experienced it on some level. All of us here have done something for somebody and just got that incredible joy of, you know, I didn't want anything from them, and it seemed to help them, and I just love that feeling. It was what I looked for in drugs. It was what I looked for in alcohol. It was what I looked for in relationships. It was what I looked for in, it was what, it, you know, and it's totally free, and it's totally here and now, and it's totally able to be tapped into at any moment. At that moment, did I make a decision to make it a priority right now, right here. And then right now and right here, and then 5 minutes from now, and then when I interact with somebody, whether they're acting the way I want them to or not, whether I think they deserve it or not, whether I want to or not, or whether I feel like it or not, for me, none of that really matters. That in doing it and making it a priority, that was something that I could never pay enough money for. That was when the only way that I could ever repay the feeling that trying to do the next loving thing has done for me is to try to carry that message, you know, to carry that message of the spiritual awakening, of the awakening to that love within me that is always there and I was always free to give, that it's always flowing through me. But when I block it off, then it starts getting stagnant and it starts getting filled with dirt and all that crap.
Go.
It just shut off.
What I forgot to mention last night was when I speak, I often say, and when we do things like this, the only preparation we really do is just sit in meditation and say a prayer, something like, God, please use me. And I like that because it takes the heat off of me. If we say something this weekend that you guys don't like, don't blame us, blame God. You know, because all we do is just say the prayer and like, you know, y'all just experienced with Bill, God wound him up and, you know, and he played its course and it stopped. And it's a beautiful thing because it takes the heat off of us. And it takes ego out of the picture. Don't get me wrong, you know, I could still get caught up in ego up here. But hopefully that's very minimal this weekend. We're not capable of doing something like this. He's not capable of talking a half hour straight on the principle of love. I don't think I've ever shared this from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know that I've ever shared it with anyone one-on-one. I don't even know if I ever shared it with Kathy, but I'm going to share it now, because Bill just kind of brought me back to it. I'm not quite sure how old I was, but I was in high school, and... I remember it like it was yesterday. We were in machine shop, metal shop, and this kid. In retrospect, it just seems like he came up to me, and he goes, "Mike, do you love yourself?" Now, mind you, I'm in high school. I don't know that I was drinking a heck of a lot then, but I was definitely a little pre-alcoholic. I was probably a freshman or a sophomore. And this kid has the audacity to say, "Mike, do you love yourself?" I mean, who asks that question? And I don't quite remember my answer, but I remember... that I probably tried to blow him off and, you know, maybe punched him or something. I really don't know. But I do remember, and I just experienced it a couple minutes ago, I do remember the feeling that I got inside, that it was like, no, I absolutely hate myself. I despise myself. I can't stand me. And I hate all of you, too. And alcohol fixed that. Self-will run riot fixed that. Inappropriate sex conduct fixed that. Spending money I don't have fixes that. Blaming you for something that I'm at fault at fixes that. Living in fear fixes that. But not really. Because it doesn't work. You get to a point where alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, food, whatever it is that I take from the outside to fill the inside, just doesn't work anymore. Because we have every gosh darn thing we need within us. We were born that way. For deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, that is the only place that God can be found. We're born with that, guys. That doesn't go away. That's not something that's just given to me because I'm a good spiritual child of God. A friend of ours last weekend was giving us a talk, and he used the phrase, I think I'm going to go off and become a sunbeam for God. You know? This is a gift, and we're born with it. It's not something we have to earn. This love, this God that's inside of us. The analogy came to me one day, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was like a clogged up sink. I was a clogged pipe. When I came to you guys, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys offered me a program, a 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, free for the taking, no strings attached, take her to leave it alone. And I began to work this 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that was, what that did for me was like Drano does to a clogged pipe. Alcoholics Anonymous, love, God, you people are like spiritual Drano. You cleaned me out. This is not a program or any spirituality or religion. This is not a program of addition. Norm Alfie said it years and years and years ago. It's about subtraction. Take away the junk, the resentment, the fear, the inappropriate sex conduct, the judgments, the self-will, the actor, self-will run riot. Impatience, intolerance, all that stuff. The steps just clean me out of that, and I'm left with what I've always had my entire life, and I've just been blind and I couldn't see it. Chuck C. used to say all the time, what you are looking for, you are looking with. The motivation, the ambition, the spiritual energy that you came to this retreat with this weekend, that's God within you, is you, your true nature, my true nature, his true nature. We're born that way. I really don't think we're put on this earth to be miserable, to live a life of pain. Another gentleman from California says that there's no pain in change. It's the resistance to change that causes us pain. And once you get through that muck, once you get through that fifth season of mud, love is the only thing that's there. God is the only thing that's there. What I was before I was born is always there, because it never goes away. Some people call it my Buddha nature. Some people call it the Spirit of Jesus. Some people call it the Holy Ghost. Right now, this particular session at 11:30 on April the 12th, 2003, we're calling it love. Don't worship the words. Worship. Don't worship the fingers. Worship what the fingers point to. And you know what? In the spiritual life, silence makes so much more sense. We could come up here every session and just sit in the silence, and you guys would probably get more out of that once you got through the chatter in your heads. Which leads me to something I'm coming across with, or maybe I'm just coming into a greater awareness of it, with the people that I've been working with lately, is this defect that seems to be within us. I call it the judge. It can be called self-condemnation, self-hatred. Whatever it is, it's the total and complete opposite of self-love. It's the total and complete opposite of who and what we really are. And I don't know why we have it. I think maybe years of use and abuse of alcohol and other things to treat that spiritual malady that Bill talked about last night. I think that's a big part of it. But the people that I've been working with lately, and I love it because they're just spiritual mirrors for me. When I'm working one-on-one with someone on my couch in our living room, in our home, I'm no greater than, and that person is no less than me. We are two equals, because what that person does for me is just puts up a mirror to my face. Because what they're suffering from, I suffer from too. If I let up on the spiritual program of action one bit, boom, I'm going to be right there. I'm going to be on the opposite side of the couch if I'm not in the gutter. And I'm just seeing a lot of self-hatred and a lot of self-condemnation and this character defect that I call the judge. And I really got in contact, for me personally, I really got in contact with the judge, if you will. I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago, I was writing inventory. And I asked the question, I'm sure pretty much everyone in this room is familiar with a four-column resentment inventory out of the big book. And I asked the question, is it okay to put my name in column one? And the person that was helping me with inventory at the time said, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's ego. How dare you write about, you know, I'm exaggerating. He didn't really use that harsh tone of a voice, but there's something that still wells up within me when I think about this. He just said, no, you can't put your name in column one. It's an exercise in ego. And it was gnawing on me. It just kept coming up. Write down your name. Do an inventory on yourself. And finally one day I said, screw him. I'm going to do it anyway. You got to get to a point in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous where you got to go with what you feel deep down in your heart, regardless of what anybody says. You got to go with what you feel, and you got to
for the next couple minutes is self-love. Bill touched upon it. And I wrote this inventory about myself. And I was resentful at me. I don't even remember why. It doesn't matter. The second column usually gets thrown away anyway. It's not important. And it affected every darn area of my life. And I saw in the fourth column why I resented me. And I saw the selfishness. And I saw how I play God. And I saw the fears connected with that. And I saw the self-seeking. And I saw the dishonesty. And I saw the dishonesty with myself. It's easy to see dishonesty with you now. I was about 6 years sober at the time. 5 or 6 years sober. It's easy to see dishonesty with you. I tell you a lie. I know I'm lying. I'm awake today. I'm not sleepwalking, dreaming I'm awake. I know cash register honesty today. I've learned three different types of dishonesty. When I tell an outright lie, or I steal, you know, cash register honesty. I think that's one of the first things we come into contact when we get here. Then there's a lie of commission. That's the same thing. Outright lie. Then there's the lie of omission. When I conveniently leave something out. I don't tell you something that I probably should. Usually it's because I don't want to look bad. And then there's a third form of dishonesty that took me a long time to see. And that's self-delusion and self-deception. And that's when I lie to myself. And there comes a point in time when we gotta stop lying to ourselves. Because it just doesn't work. And I saw that when I wrote inventory about myself. And thank God, I followed that still small voice within. Regardless of what anyone else told me. And I wrote that inventory on myself. And I saw that the biggest defect at that time that I suffered from was what I call a judge. I judge myself. I rip myself up to ribbons. I stub my toe and I'm the biggest jerk on the planet. I'm not allowed to make mistakes. That's why I've been saying time after time after time, I'm a human being. I'm not telling that to you guys. I'm telling that to remind me. Because I will make mistakes. And I saw that somehow I put myself in a box. I couldn't even make a mistake. I couldn't be human. Can you imagine a human not being human? Can you imagine a dog not being able to be a dog? And I began to see that how I judge myself to shreds. And this thing about self-talk, you know, my self-talk, what I thought about myself was terrible. You know, we go one of two, ego is an incredible thing because we go one of two ways. We're either the greatest of the world, king of the hill, or we're the lowest scum on earth. The ego don't care. It wins either way. Today, I'm proud and happy to say that I'm just a drunk. I'm a human being. I'm another one of God's kids, just like anybody else. And I'm finally starting to begin to love me today. You know, and that could be hokey and ew, what are you talking about? And that's how I thought it was too. You know, I would hear stuff like, say, well, I love myself today. I go home and I take a bubble bath. Or I go to the mall and I treat myself. I love me.
Chocolate.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, can you live with yourself in a room for 1 week by yourself? Can you be by yourself for 1 week? He did it for 10 days. He was with a bunch of other people, couldn't communicate with those people. What are you left with? Yourself, your head, your mind. If he had the defect of judge alive and well in him, he couldn't have did those 10 days. I'm sure the judge reared his ugly head at day 2 and day 7. But we get to throw the judge out of the courtroom. And what's left is love. See, I learned something. If I'm judging me, by default, I have to judge you. I had it backwards. I saw the defect probably in my first or second inventory. I judge other people. I don't love other people enough. Well, great. I'm gonna stop judging other people and I'm gonna love more. Replace the defect with the opposite. It should work. Not if I'm not practicing it within me first. In order to love you, I had to begin to love myself. In order to quit judging you, I had to begin to quit judging myself. Because they told me from day one, AA is an inside job. And now I've stopped.
Oh, I feel much better. How about if we do a meditation?
Keep it rolling.
This is, I'll be talking through this constantly. This meditation is one of my favorites. I've done this with lots of people. The responses that I've gotten from this meditation is one woman sprung up out of her seat and came over to me and said, that was better than any orgasm I've ever had. And another person looked at me and said, that sucked. I didn't get anything out of it. So whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever. Doesn't much matter. And what I've also come to learn by going to this 10-day thing is that each meditation is completely different than the next. So don't expect any state and think you're going to stay there, because it just doesn't work like that. I guess I would call this a golden light meditation, because that's a part of it. This will beep, so that'll give me 15 minutes exactly. Cool. If you could please get comfortable, and if you're wearing glasses, perhaps take them off, because you're just going to close your eyes anyway. Some people have told me that if you keep your feet flat on the ground and not crossed, That somehow centers you with the earth. I have no idea, but I was just told that. Definitely get comfortable. We're probably going to spend 10-15 minutes doing this, so just be comfortable. Try to just be in the moment and be here and now. The interesting thing about the mind is thoughts will come and go, but we don't have to buy into them. We can just watch them kind of float by like clouds, just uninvolved and unemotionally attached to them. But let's begin with 4 or 5 really deep breaths. And before you do that, what I mean by deep breaths is take in as much air as you possibly can to the point where your lungs fill and it goes down almost to your stomach, almost all the way to the point where it almost hurts. Like take in so much air, almost to the point where it almost hurts. And then exhale all the way, almost to the point where it almost hurts. And let's do that 4 or 5 times now, please.
okay, just bring yourself back to regular breathing. You don't have to regulate it or anything. What's interesting about deep breaths is that a few deep breaths releases a natural muscle relaxant into the system. It's actually a good thing to do if you're having trouble sleeping. Just maybe focus on your breathing now. Just notice, maybe for the next minute, the flow and the pulse of your breathing through your nose. Something that's interesting about observing the breath is that the breath coming in is a little bit colder than the breath going out. If you notice on the nose, maybe you can notice that. Something that's also interesting about observing the breath, or maybe even the heartbeat, is that the breath and the heartbeat is always in the moment. I'd like to thank our higher power for the time that we've spent here and for the remainder of this weekend. The new friends that we've met, the conversations we've had, for the opportunity to be in this house of love and of God and of truth. For those that came before us that have carried the message, that have been so instrumental on our path to conscious contact. Now I'm going to count from 10 to 0. And as I go down on this count, feel yourself becoming more and more relaxed. 10, 9, 8. You can almost feel the muscles in your back softening and relaxing a little bit more. 7, 6, 5. You can almost feel your butt sinking into the chair from the gravity. 4, 3, 2. You can feel your legs relaxing a little bit more. 1, 0. Now say to yourself, I am very relaxed. Again, if you find your mind wander, the moment you realize it, you are back in the moment. And just bring yourself back to listening to my voice. Again, don't beat yourself up for drifting off, just happily and unemotionally disregard the thoughts and come back to this moment. if you have an itch, scratch it. This doesn't need to be rigid. If something distracts you, or if someone moves, or you notice the refrigerator, just include it as part of the meditation. And don't look at it as something that shouldn't have happened. Now imagine in the center of your mind a little ball of golden light. This golden light begins to grow until it fills the whole inner surface of your mind. It continues to grow until it fills your whole entire body on the inside, as well as a little bit on the outside of your body, almost creating a golden light surrounding us and in us. This golden light represents the presence, the love, the peace of God. Feel it as it surrounds you and reassures you and calms you with its warmth and love. Creating a intense and infinite sense of home and a rightness and compassion, as if we are merely sitting in God's hand, safe and protected. Beaming through every cell of your body. Healing and comforting all within. Just an incredible sense of warmth. Now this golden light continues to grow until it fills the whole inner surface of this room with intense love and compassion. Feel it coming from your heart, extending out past you. Just flooding the room. It continues to grow until it fills the whole inner surface of this house with the presence and the love and the compassion of our loving Creator. May we ask this power to help us with the words and the actions and the thoughts that we have here while we're here this weekend, as well as to take home with us. For God is always with us. Now this golden light begins to get smaller until it no longer fills the whole entire house and only fills this entire room. It continues to get smaller until it only surrounds our body and inside our body. Still very loving and very warm. It continues to get smaller until it's a little ball of golden light sitting just to the right of your heart, where it never goes out, where it's always there prompting you to do the next right thing and hoping that you will turn to it for guidance. Always loving us. Always willing. Where it will always be. Where we merely have to awaken to the awareness of it. And when the time seems right, open your eyes.
Staying in the place that you're in now. Staying focused on the meditation we just did. For the next hour, let's try to do an almost impossible task for an alcoholic. Throughout the next hour, throughout our lunch break, let's be verbally silent. Let's eat our lunch in silence. You can communicate with members of the staff, the chef, the people serving the food. You can communicate through a nod or through a wink or if you have to point to something. But verbally, let's try to remain silent. When we're eating our meal, let's try to eat mindfully. Let's try to actually focus on our food while we're eating, instead of the thousand other things we can think about. Maybe eat a little slower than you normally would. Somebody once said that to chew a piece of food 30 times before you swallow it, that's eating mindfully. When you leave the table, if there's still time left before 1 o'clock, remain silent. And then at 1 o'clock, the silence can be broken. We'll go on our 3-hour break, and we'll rejoin each other at 4 o'clock. Do you have anything else you want to add? Thank you.